years ago, because I happened to be seated next to a Hungarian physicist about my age, and we were talking about what life was like during the Cold War for physicists in Hungary. And I said, so what were you doing? And he said, well, we were mostly breaking stealth. And I said, that's a good job. That's interesting. How does that work? And so to understand that, you have to understand a little bit about how stealth works. And so this is an oversimplification, but basically, it's not like you can just pass a radar signal right through 156 tons of steel in the sky. It's not just going to disappear. But if you can take this big, massive thing and you could turn it into a million little things, something like a flock of birds, well, then the radar that's looking for that has to be able to see every flock of birds in the sky. And if you're a radar, that's a really bad job. And he said, yeah. He said, but that's if you're a radar. He said, so we didn't use a radar. We built a black box that was looking for electrical signals, electronic communication. And whenever we saw a flock of birds that had electronic communication, we thought, probably has something to do with the Americans. And I said, yeah, that's good. So you've effectively negated 60 years of aeronautic research. What's your act two? You know, like, what do you do when you grow up? And he said, well, you know, financial services. And I said, oh, because those have been in the news lately. And I said, how does that work? And he said, well, there's 2,000 physicists on Wall Street now, and I'm one of them. And I said, well, so what's the black box for Wall Street? And he said, well, it's funny that you asked that, because it's actually called black box trading. And it's also sometimes called algo trading, algorithmic trading. And algorithmic trading evolved in part because institutional traders have the same problems that the United States Air Force had, which is that they're moving these positions, whether it's Procter & Gamble or Accenture or whatever, they're moving like a million shares of something through the market. And if they do that all at once, it's like playing poker and just going all in right away, right? You just tip your hand. And so they have to find a way, and they use algorithms to do this, to break up that big thing into a million little transactions. And the magic and the horror of that is that the same math that you use to break up the big thing into a million little things can be used to find a million little things and sew them back together and figure out what's actually happening in the market. So if you need to have some image of what's happening in the stock market right now, what you can picture is a bunch of algorithms that are basically programmed to hide, and a bunch of algorithms that are programmed to go find them and act. And all of that's great, and it's fine, and that's 70% of the United States stock market, 70% of the operating system formerly known as your pension, your mortgage. And what could go wrong, right? What could go wrong is that a year ago, 9% of the entire market just disappears in 5 minutes, and they called it the flash crash of 245, right? All of a sudden, 9% just goes away, and nobody to this day can even agree on what happened, because nobody ordered it, nobody asked for it, nobody had any control over what was actually happening. All they had was just a monitor in front of them that had the numbers on it, and just a red button that said, stop. And that's the thing, right? This is that we're writing things. We're writing these things that we can no longer read. And it's we've rendered something kind of illegible. And we've lost the sense of what's actually happening in this world that we've made. And we're starting to make our way. There's a company in Boston called Nanex. And they use math and magic and I don't know what. And they reach in to all the market data. And they find, actually, sometimes some of these algorithms. And when they find them, they pull them out and they pin them to the wall like butterflies. And they do what we've always done when confronted with huge amounts of data that we don't understand, which is that they give them a name and a story. So this is one that they found, they called the knife, the carnival, the Boston Shuffler, Twilight. And the gag is that, of course, these aren't just running through the market, right? You can find these kinds of things wherever you look once you learn how to look for them, right? You you can find it here, this book about flies that you may have been looking at on Amazon. You may have noticed it when its price started at $1.7 million. It's out of print still. If you had bought it at 1.7, it would have been a bargain. A few hours later, it had gone up to $23.6 million plus shipping and handling. And the question is, nobody was buying or selling anything. What was happening? And you see this behavior on Amazon as surely as you see it on Wall Street. And when you see this kind of behavior, what you see is the evidence of algorithms in conflict, algorithms locked in loops with each other without any human oversight, without any adult supervision to say, actually, 1.7 million is plenty. Stick with that. And as with Amazon, so it is with Netflix. And so Netflix has gone through several different algorithms over the years. They started with Cinematch, and they've tried a bunch of others. There's Dinosaur Planet, there's Gravity, they're using Pragmatic Chaos now. Pragmatic Chaos is, like all of Netflix algorithms, trying to do the same thing. It's trying to get a grasp on you, on the firmware inside the human skull, so that it can recommend what movie you might want to watch next, which is a very, very difficult problem. But the difficulty of the problem and the fact that we don't really quite have it down, it doesn't take away from the effects that Pragmatic Chaos has. Pragmatic Chaos, like all Netflix algorithms, determines in the end 60% of what movies end up being rented, right? So one piece of code with one idea about you is responsible for 60% of those movies. But what if you could rate those movies before they get made, right? Wouldn't that be handy? Well, so a few data scientists from the UK are in Hollywood, and they have story algorithms in a company called Epagogix, and you can run your script through there, and they can tell you quantifiably that that's a $30 million movie or a $200 million movie. And the thing is that this isn't Google, right? This isn't information. These aren't financial stats. This is culture. And what you see here, or what you don't really see normally, is that these are the physics of culture. We'll be right back.